The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. Shavua Tov. And Israel's, of course, an example of what happens when you're not vigilant, because it was very well under control in the country until it wasn't.
Yeah, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Howard, in truth, someone who's been through the process of, you know, both a lockdown and now quite a significant opening up, I think it's a lot more difficult when things are more open, because there is a certain social pressure, there is inclination to do more. All of a sudden, you are having to take decisions rather than being decisions being taken on your behalf. When everything's closed down, it's an easy decision, right? There's nowhere to go, there's nothing to do. But as you rightly point out, even though things are open, the question is not only should you do it, but also how do you do it? And I think that therein lies the real secret, because you know, I want to go to my gym. I want to go to the restaurants. I want to support them. I want to, you know, allow them to have a livelihood as well, because they've been very, very significantly economically affected. But how do you go about that? Sometimes instead of going to the restaurant, it's just better to order in at home, and you're supporting them, and restaurants do appreciate it.
In other words, find a way. Find a way to achieve all of these goals.
Exactly. I got a little nice handwritten note from the restaurant that I ordered from a week or two ago saying, thank you for your support. We've thrown in dessert on the house.
That's
amazing. You know, things like that. So they do very much appreciate the efforts that we're going to. Not everybody, I have to say. But I think we need to just kind of change our overall attitude, how we go about things. So if you go to the gym, just be more cautious. You know, the gyms have been forced to change things around as well, and we have to fit in with that and change things around. Unfortunately, Israel has not been doing well at that at all, and there is no inclination to go back to lockdown. It just seems economically against what we want to do, but we somehow have to find a way to live with this and live with this healthily and safely.
Absolutely, not easy at all. Before we talk about the main subject, which is the UAE, let's just, because we are on COVID, there was a large outbreak in East Jerusalem. So just tell us about that.
So there was, and it's being attributed to the Eid al-Adha holiday, which took place in the Muslim sector a couple of weeks ago. And if reports are to be believed, then really there was absolutely no consideration at all during this time, flouting of regulations, no consideration for social distancing, people getting together, weddings being celebrated with large crowds of people. And this is apparently what has led to the situation that we're seeing not only in East Jerusalem, but unfortunately in many of the Muslim communities around Israel now, 2 or 3 weeks later after the event, we're suddenly starting to feel the impact of that. Unfortunately, there were some unfortunate comments made by our new coronavirus commissioner, Professor Ronnie Gamzu, who said inadvertently that number of infections within the Arab sector was almost like carrying out a terror attack. And he's come out to apologize for that. That's not what he intended. But what he meant was that this is just a lack of discipline, a lack of adhering to the rules, and people should know better and can know better, should do better. So unfortunately, we've seen this massive outbreak within the Muslim Arab community. And I have to also say that within the ultra-Orthodox community, things, while they have improved from the early days, are still not a whole lot better. They're still consistently shows that they have a much higher infection rate than the rest of the country. And again, people need to amend their behavior accordingly. And to the extent that people are not willing and not prepared to amend their behavior, we actually see the physical results in the numbers. There's absolutely no doubt about what leads to what here, and people just need to understand that.
Indeed, and I'm just hoping that our listeners are listening and learning, taking in Israel's experience. You are ahead of us in this, being in the Northern Hemisphere, and we've still got a journey to go. I just hope that people remain cautious. All right, unbelievable news took place. I think it was Thursday evening, so we didn't chat about it on Friday because we don't speak to you then, but Israel and the United Arab Emirates have agreed to establish full diplomatic relations between between the countries. This was just incredible. So let's go through what this means. What is the basis of this new peace? And Zanati was asking earlier, is this the same as, is it similar to when Israel made peace with Egypt and Jordan? And I said, no. My feeling was no, because there, it was, you know, there had been wars, there had been loss of life, there had been humiliation, there was a lot of different types of feeling. This one seems to be just so much more open, embracing and warm, but maybe, you know, maybe that's my perception of it. Take us through this.
Howard, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that the one thing that distinguishes the peace agreement that was made with Jordan and Egypt with the one that is now in the process of being hammered out with the United Arab Emirates, I think in the first place, we are actually not physical neighbors. There is no common border between the two countries. And I think that that makes a whole heap of difference between what happened with Jordan and with Egypt as opposed to what's happening with the United Arab Emirates. The other thing I think is really important is that I think with Jordan and Egypt, some of it was kind of forced in a way by the international community, by events that go on within the international community, by the lack of stability that was really coming out of the conflict between Israel and its Arab neighbors, particularly with Egypt, where the Suez Canal is a very strategic waterway and the flow of oil becomes really critical and important. And in fairness, I mean, there is no real major economic ties that pull those countries together. This was a peace, let's say, out of necessity to some degree, rather than a peace out of desire. And I think with the United Arab Emirates, there's both elements involved. The necessity comes from the conflict with Iran. There can be absolutely no doubt in anybody's mind that Iran is very much at the forefront of this particular peace arrangement, of this particular establishment of diplomatic ties. Let's not forget that the United Arab Emirates is on the border with Iran and that Israel wants to get closer to Iran. The UAE is a very, very convenient location to be situated in order to have access to Iran. I think there is, you know, it's like 70 kilometers away from Iran or something like that. So if it was to be decided, and, you know, perhaps I'm putting some ideas in people's minds, then certainly wouldn't have thought of this. If it was decided that Israel would locate some of its armed forces in the UAE or have access to landing rights in the UAE very, very conveniently, or perhaps even just have some inconspicuous people located in the UAE in a friendly sort of way who have access to Iran, that would just make the world of difference to Israel's conflict with Iran. And let's also not forget that Iran is in a conflict situation with other countries in the area, the UAE being one of them. Iran presents a threat to them, and therefore Israel and the UAE are almost certainly going to cooperate with each other
Which actually puts it into perspective, because I was thinking when you were talking about this, and earlier when I was planning, I was thinking, what's there ready to hammer out in terms of an agreement? Because if you think about it, I mean, you establish diplomatic ties and you open things up and people can sort of manage what they want to manage. But if you're talking about adding a military level to it and perhaps assistance, sharing technology, specifically with regard to Iran, then of course there's a lot to hammer out, and of course that those details need to be established.
Absolutely, and in fact the head of the Mossad, Yossi Cohen, is on his way to the UAE this week. There is already a delegation going from the Mossad to go and sit down with the Emirati authorities and hammer out whatever agreements need to be hammered out with them. That is already in train and has already been in train even since before these diplomatic relations were announced. I think the other thing which is a good basis for an agreement and for diplomatic relations between two countries is economic ties. And we certainly see that within the UAE. There is a certain entrepreneurship. There's a certain desire to do business, to make, to create a certain hub for the United Arab Emirates, for business being done within the Arabian area, Saudi Arabia, the Persian Gulf, the Arabian Gulf, all of that. You know, we've seen Dubai created as an airport hub. That doesn't come from nowhere. That has a certain entrepreneurial spirit about it, and that certainly they have in common with Israel. And I think that that's going to be a very, very convenient and very complementary connection that will be established between those two countries. So I've just mentioned two very, very simple things, but there's certainly some excitement that surrounds the establishment of these diplomatic ties. Of course, the Emirates Airlines and Etihad will certainly begin flying their planes to Israel backwards and forwards. I'm guessing that Al Win eventually gets back into the air will also fly. And also this may well blaze the trail for agreements with other countries around the area. Saudi Arabia has been mentioned on the front of people's lips more than once. Jared Kushner mentioned it also again over the weekend. It seems as if the Saudi Arabia is definitely coming towards Israel. The whole Iranian thing, again, in the forefront of any relations that Israel might have with Saudi Arabia. Oman is coming along. There are others who are coming along. Bahrain, for example, is the next one that's probably coming along. Even though Kuwait has said they will be last on the list, and maybe they will be, I could quite easily see Qatar establishing diplomatic relations with Iran, with Israel. This is all about necessity. This is all about desire. And I think that there is a certain logic behind relations between our respective countries. So this is certainly exciting in the coronavirus age, where we don't meet on the lawn of the Rose Garden at the White House, which is usually the traditional place for these agreements to be signed off. But of course, President Trump taking his level of credit for the work that has gone on, and certainly Prime Minister Netanyahu enjoying some of the limelight as well as a result of this. But overall, I think this is really, really good news. And I think that this really puts Iran to one side, isolates Iran to some degree now. And interestingly, you know, the Palestinians were very, very unhappy about this. Lots and lots of negative press coming out from the Palestinian Authority. How can friends let friends down? Why is this happening? I think they're also feeling isolated and sidelined as a result
I just want to ask as well, is there a difference in opinion between, you know, Palestinian leaders and the actual, you know, people, Palestinians themselves? Because, I mean, the way everything is moving, it seems like, you know,
there's often a distinction.
Exactly. And it seems like there's going to be a lot of economic activity that could benefit Palestinians as well. So is there, and how long can the Palestinian leaders hold this off?
So it's a good question, Zanati, and of course there is a lot of distinction between the Palestinian street and the Palestinian leadership. The problem is we don't get to hear much about what comes out of the Palestinian street, because it's also tightly controlled, and also the way that people think and the way they express themselves is super tightly controlled within the Palestinian Authority area. So we don't always really know what the Palestinian street is thinking about, but, you know, I would suggest that most Palestinians would like to have a peaceful existence where they can raise their families in economic, with some sort of economic stability. I think that that's what they would want. They would want economic links. They would want to be able to enjoy things backwards and forwards. We see many of the Palestinians come to Israel to work. That's an economic necessity. The way that the Palestinians are being raised from childhood is to hate Israel. When you see the educational material that they get in their schools, they're being raised from a very, very young age to try to influence the way that they think. And so one has to therefore understand that if that influence wasn't there, their thinking would be entirely different. And therefore the Palestinian Authority feels the necessity to influence their thinking, because they understand that if that influence wasn't there, the thinking would be something completely, completely different, and might well not support the policies and the line that the leadership are taking. So I think there is a huge difference. And I think that when they see successful peace agreements being implemented with other countries, their thinking might be influenced even further.
Yeah, interesting. I was telling our listeners earlier, I saw an Al Jazeera tweet that this was their headline. This was Al Jazeera's tweet: the UAE makes peace with Israel's war on the Palestinians.
So that is the way that the Palestinian line really has adopted things, because they are really saying that the UAE has let them down. They feel let down because they've gone in and established these diplomatic ties with Israel. The Palestinians feel that they've been effectively dumped by the UAE in this conflict, this age-old conflict. And instead of the Palestinians thinking, well, now we have friends in the UAE who are friendly with Israel, perhaps there can be some sort of a relationship formed here which would benefit everybody. No, they feel that by forming a friend, forming a friendship with an enemy, it goes against their interests. They don't see the positive side. They don't see the opportunity. They just see the threat. And that's very, very unfortunate.
Unfortunately, this is where we have to leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. I'm sure we'll continue this conversation tomorrow as we get more information.